Our next case is James Webb, Jeffrey Hermanson, and Michaeline Hieronymus versus the City of Blackhawk, case number 2011-SC-536. Are both counsel ready? Argument is set for an hour, half an hour per side. A couple of housekeeping matters. One, when you do argue, please tell us who you are and who you represent. And two, I wanted to let you know that some of us are using iPads. We have the briefs on our iPads, our notes, and we link it into Westlaw as well as the record. We're not surfing. With that, we'll begin here from the petitioners.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, Paul Schwartz for the petitioners. I intend this morning to address the three sources, the Home Rule Amendment, CRS 424110, and 424111, that Blackhawk says permit it to conflict with state law by banning bicycling without there being a suitable nearby alternative bicycling route. Before I do that, however, I want to make absolutely clear, in no way would ruling for petitioners in this case affect the power of local governments to regulate traffic consistent with state law, nor would ruling for the petitioners affect the power of home rule cities to pass purely local ordinances, even if they are in conflict with state law. All that we are asking in this case is for the court to reaffirm the fundamental principle that cities cannot pass ordinances that conflict with state law, in this case 424.14.12.1 and especially 109.11, and involve matters of mixed state and local concern. Now, with respect to the Home Rule Amendment, the question is simply, does Blackhawk's bicycle ban involve purely local matters? If it does, they have the power under the Home Rule Amendment. If not, if it's a matter of mixed state and local concern, they can't conflict with state law. And in this case, even the judges below held that this is a matter of mixed state and local concern, and with good reason. In the Town of Telluride case from 2000, this court, among many other cases, laid out the factors for determining whether something is a mixed state and local concern. One of the key factors that Town of Telluride lays out is whether the ordinance has extraterritorial effects. And that makes sense because when an ordinance affects many people beyond the city's boundaries, those people who are affected cannot seek to remedy a bad or an unwise ordinance through the ballot box. They don't have the power to elect to replace the city council. And this case is a poster child, I would submit, for an ordinance with extraterritorial effects, particularly as applied in this case.
But the way they set it up would lend you to believe that. They allow local bicycles, but not out-of-town bicycles.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And Gregory Street in particular is the street that my clients were ticketed for bicycling on. It is the only connector between the peak-to-peak highway and Central City, and therefore sort of points beyond and from on either side. And I submit that is why both the municipal court of Blackhawk and the Gilpin County District Judge sitting as a one-judge appellate court agreed with us that this ordinance involves a matter of mixed state and local concern. Just to touch on some of the other Town of Telluride factors, which I think also apply here, you know, one of the factors is whether the state historically has engaged in this kind of regulation. We were able to find, it may go back earlier, we were able to find at least back to 1935 state law regulating bicycles, Colorado Statute Chapter 16, Section 162 from 1935. So obviously there has been a historic regulation by the state of bicycles, which is not to say, of course, that bicycling and traffic is not a matter of local concern. It is, of course, a matter of local concern. It's not a matter.
Don't you have a problem here, though? This is not a state highway, right?
That's true.
And even on state highways, like you know, the one coming up Clear Creek Canyon, the state can ban bicycles traveling on that route, right? The state doesn't have to allow bicycling along every state road, even, right?
This case is about, that's true, but this case is about the power of local governments and what the state has said, what the rules that the state, which is the sovereign, has set forth, and the powers that it has allowed local governments to exercise with respect to bicycling. So the legislature, in its wisdom, has said in section 42.4.14.12.1 that the general rule is that bicyclists enjoy the same rights and duties as motorists, except as specifically provided in Article 4 of Title 42. And in Article 4, the state, the legislature, has given local governments certain powers to regulate and even prohibit bicycling. However, in Section 109.11, it has provided that power to prohibit bicycling on heavily traveled streets is where a suitable alternative bike path exists, either on the right-of-way or within 450 feet of the right-of-way. And it is undisputed in this case that that there is no such alternative bicycling route. Blackhawk just went ahead and banned bicycling anyway. And so that is in conflict with what the legislature has set up. And I think the point becomes even clearer, Justice Hobbs, when the court looks at a series of statutes that the legislature has passed with respect to this. So in 109.11, as we said, with respect to what I would call surface streets, that that term, surface streets, is not in 109.11, but I use it to contrast what is covered by 109.11 with controlled access highways, which is covered by a different statute. So I'll get there in a second. So in 109.11, it says that local governments can prohibit bicycling on heavily traveled streets where, among other things, there is an alternative bicycling route within a certain distance. In section 42.4.111.1N, as in newspaper, the state gives local governments the power to regulate or prohibit non-motorized traffic on controlled access highways. So that subsection N, doesn't use the word bicycles, but clearly non-motorized traffic includes bicycles. In fact, in 109.11, bicycles or bicycling is specifically referred to as a form of non-motorized traffic. Now, these two statutes that I've just referred to, there are parallels with respect to the power that the state legislature has given the Department of Transportation with respect to state highways under its jurisdiction. So, for example, in the first part of 109.11, it says that the Transportation Department similarly can ban bicycling on surface streets where there is a suitable bicycling alternative within a quarter mile of the right-of-way. So it gives the Transportation Department a quarter mile leeway. It gives local governments 450 feet leeway. Then in the latter part of section 109.11, it says, except the state, the Transportation Department, with respect to controlled access highways, has the power that it receives in section 42.4.10.1. 10-10 sub 3. Well, 42-4 10-10 3 gives the Transportation Department broad power to ban various forms of transportation on controlled access highways. So I submit, when you put it all together, and of course it is the obligation of the court to read statutory schemes as a whole, the portrait, the picture is clear. And that is that as a general matter, cyclists, bicycling, has the same rights to ride on the same roads that motorists have, except as provided. What is provided is that on controlled access highways, they can be banned by the State Transportation Department and by local...
Yeah, just define controlled access highway there, if you will. What is it?
I don't have the definition in my head. It is defined, I believe, in the definitional section of the of Article of Title 42, which is 42-1-102, I believe. But my general understanding of it is basically a highway with limited exits and entrances. So like a highway where there are dedicated exits. And that makes sense. There's a certain judgment that the legislature has made with respect to safety surrounding those kinds of roads, not wanting to impede traffic, potentially slow it down, that kind of thing. At the same time...
I have one more question for you.
Yes.
We had that case up in Pitkin County involving the envelope under the multimodal approach to transportation. When the legislature switched from a Department of Highways to a Department of Transportation, it took on this kind of federal approach to get federal funding for multimodal. How do bicycles fit into that multimodal picture? And do we take that into account in looking at legislative intent?
I'm not familiar with the case, and so I just don't know the answer to that, Justice Hobbs. But
well, I guess my question is, even in a controlled access highway, isn't there some program to accommodate a bike lane, not a bike lane, but some kind of alternative in the same general vicinity for bicycling?
Sure. And look, just because 42-4-10-10-3 gives the Transportation Department certain powers to ban non-motorized traffic, on controlled access highways, and Section 111-1N gives similar power to local governments, that doesn't mean that different levels of government don't and shouldn't work together with the cycling community to promote cycling and create alternatives. But I do acknowledge that 42-4-10-10-3 exists and gives the Transportation Department certain powers to ban traffic on controlled access highways, like Section 111-1N gives that power to local governments. The point is, with respect to this case, that this is not, there are no controlled access highways in Blackhawk. And that's not what this case is about. And when we look at the statutory scheme, it is clear that the legislature has set up a system that says, with respect to surface streets, non-controlled access highways, the cities have certain power, but that power does not include the power to ban bicycling on a street, even a heavily traveled street, where there is no suitable nearby alternative bicycling route that complies with Section 109.
Could I interrupt you and just ask you to just move on that? So you've made clear that the lower courts agree that this is a question of mixed state and local concern and don't disagree about the standard that the state would then take priority. Would you just remind us, so what was their rationale for why there was no conflict with this statute? And why was that wrong?
I'm sorry, maybe I misunderstood. Are you asking about the
lower courts ruled against you, right? So they found there was no conflict with this statute.
Right. The district court said that the authorization to prohibit bicycling came from 42.4.111.1H, which is a statute that says that local authorities have the power to regulate the operation of bicycles consistent with the provisions of this article, Article 4. And so the district court held that regulation, as used in that term, inherently includes the power to prohibit bicycles. That was error. And that was error for several reasons. First of all, even if we assume or even if we accept the idea that regulate in Section 111 includes the power to prohibit, Section 111.1H specifically says that that regulation must be consistent with the provisions of this article. I submit that Section 109.11 is one of the provisions of the article, and it says that prohibition can only be where there is a suitable nearby alternative cycling route. But beyond that, in Section 111, the power to regulate does not include the power to prohibit. And we know that because there are like 31 or 32 subsections in Section 111.1. And several of them expressly authorize cities with respect to different forms of transportation or different circumstances to regulate or prohibit. But the Section 111.1H, with respect to the operation of bicycles, excludes the language or prohibit. That is significant, I submit, from a statutory interpretation standpoint. And in fact, the district court said in its opinion that it thought that our argument on that point has merit. It ultimately came to the other conclusion for one reason, because it believed that this court's 1967 decision in asphalt paving compelled it to conclude that the power to regulate includes the power to prohibit. That was clearly wrong, because if you look at the asphalt paving decision, you'll see that the statute in that case expressly authorized the counties to prohibit. In that case, it was a case about commercial trucking. So when you look at the language of 111H, and especially when you view it together with 109, which sets forth the specific circumstances in which prohibition is allowed and which would be rendered superfluous by the district courts and Blackhawk's reading of Section 111, Section 111 does not provide that authorization. The final source of power that Blackhawk claims is Section 110. That's 42.4.110. And the municipal court, just to get back to a full answer to your question, Justice Coates, the municipal court also cited that statute. There are six reasons why 42.4.110.1 does not authorize cities to conflict with state transportation law. First and foremost, it says exactly the opposite. The very beginning of Section 110.1 says that the provisions of Article 4 of Title 42, quote, shall be applicable and uniform throughout the state and in all political subdivisions and municipalities. I submit that just cannot be squared with the notion that the purpose of, or the intent of, Section 42.4.110 is actually to authorize cities to conflict with state law. Two, subpart B of Section 42.4.110.1 says that ordinances that are authorized by this statute have to comply with the procedures in Title 31 of the statutes. Title 31 is the title that deals with municipalities. That title in Section 3115.103 specifically creates the power that municipalities have to pass these ordinances that are being referenced in Section 110.1, and that power as stated in 3115-103, is to enact ordinances not inconsistent with state law. Third, I submit there is no basis in the language, the history, or the purpose of Section 424110 that indicates that the legislature intended this statute implicitly to create even more power than the Home Rule Amendment itself creates. If Blackhawk's interpretation of Section 110 is right, then even non-Home Rule cities have the power to conflict with state law, even on matters of mixed state law concern. That would be an extraordinary result, and I would say to the court that there is nothing that indicates that extraordinary result. To the contrary, as I've said, the language of the statute says exactly the opposite.
Well, the police power and the safety of the public is always a foremost concern. And here you have these narrow towns, you know, pitched on cliffs with a lot of tourist buses. Don't they have a real issue on their hands here? I mean, and you're basically saying they have to build some expensive alternative route to get around or into Blackhawk?
No, I don't. And I'm glad you raised that, Justice Hobbs, because I think there's a misconception when we talk about roads being incompatible with the normal and safe movement of traffic. That's the language that's used in these statutes and I understand to be the language that, and certainly the concept that you're referring to when you talk about these roads. If there is a conflict between safety and the normal movement of traffic, then in Colorado and under Colorado law, safety wins. Safety always wins. There are all kinds of statutes. There's the statute that says that motorists have to, if they pass a bicyclist, they have to give them 3 feet. There are criminal laws with respect to reckless driving, and there are civil laws with respect to liability. It may be that on some of these roads, the normal movement of traffic has to give, which is to say, in plain language, and we've all experienced this, that cars or coach buses bringing, you know, customers to the casinos might have to slow down, and they might have to be careful. But that is the legislative judgment that the Colorado legislature has made. Now, in its wisdom, the legislature has recognized that there are some times when we can have the best of both worlds, where there is a suitable nearby alternative for different forms of transportation. We're not just talking about cycling, but different forms of non-motorized transportation. And the law says, hey, in that situation, even if it's maybe not the absolute most convenient or most direct route or the one that the bicyclist wants to take, too bad. They've got to take that alternative, and they can be banned from this particular road. But the legislature has also made the judgment that, I submit, this is the import of all the statutes, that if that can't be done, then the answer is not that you can ban bicycling, but that, hey, maybe the normal flow of traffic doesn't flow as well. Maybe, you know, cars have to slow down and buses have to slow down. And that is just part and parcel of this fundamental Colorado policy of sharing the road, of bicyclists and motorists sharing the road, which is embodied in Section 42.4.14.12.1, which says that cyclists have the same rights and duties as motorists, except as specifically provided, and then the legislature just provides for limited circumstances where prohibitions can occur. Just to finish my discussion of Section 110.1, just two more points. The statute, the only place it authorizes local governments to enact laws or to pass ordinances in 4241101 is in subsection A, where it says that local governments have the power to, or are not precluded from, passing ordinances covering the same subject matter as Article 4. Whereas, as the court noted in the Colorado Mining Association case from 3 years ago, authored by Justice Hobbs, there is a difference between an overlap in subject matter and a conflict. And in fact, the point was made in that case that a near overlap in subject matter is not a conflict for preemption purposes. So subsection A in no way authorizes local governments to conflict with state law. And the final point that I'll make on the section 110 idea is, you know, if the court looks, I don't know how quickly you can get there on the iPads, but at pages 38 and 39 of the record is the foreword by the Transportation Department to the model traffic code. And in it, there's an explanation of this situation. And I'm getting to the point where I need these. Some of the statements that the Transportation Department makes are, the General Assembly of the State of Colorado has repeatedly recognized that conflicts between the state's traffic laws and municipal traffic ordinances lead to uncertainty in the movement of traffic and has strengthened the requirements for uniformity of traffic regulations in the following terms. And what's the first thing that the Transportation Department notes? Well, they quote from the first part of 4241101. This article constitutes the uniform traffic code throughout the state and in all political subdivisions and municipalities therein. Now, that's a version before 4241101 was slightly changed. Now, instead of referring to the uniform traffic code, it has, I think, actually even stronger language that says that the provisions of the traffic code shall be applicable and uniform throughout the state. It goes on to say, if state laws and local government traffic codes are to serve their purpose, they must complement one another. Well, that's my whole point with respect to 110.1a and the language about subject matter. What that allows the cities to do is to pass complementary ordinances, not conflicting ordinances. And the final point on the second page of the foreword, the Transportation Department specifically warns that local governments that adopt the model traffic code by reference are cautioned not to make any changes or additions which are in conflict with state law. That's exactly what Blackhawk did here. If I may, I'd like to reserve the balance.
Actually, Council, before you step away from the podium, I realize we spent a lot of time talking about the conflict issue. What is your position? If we were to agree with you on these arguments, is there any need for us to reach the police power part of this?
I don't think so. I think in that case, and that is our main argument, is that Blackhawk does not have the statutory power to pass these ordinances.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Corey Hoffman, registration number 24920, appearing this morning on behalf of the City of Blackhawk. Your Honors, the Blackhawk City Council made the difficult and obviously unpopular decision in some respects to prohibit bicycles on certain roadways within the city.
Well, you didn't press bicycles, you allowed the local ones.
Your Honor, first of all, the local origin exception, the purpose, which was never used, and the city didn't appeal the determination that it was severed, but the purpose was, to the extent the city manager could find safe times for travel, he had the authority to do so. With over-the-road coaches, with delivery buses, with all of the other incidents in Blackhawk, that opportunity was provided in the initial ordinance. There's also a permitting process in the city of Blackhawk for people to utilize if they wanted to come through Blackhawk in big groups. But the local origin exception was a way to assess, not necessarily grant, but assess whether movement could be done safely. When you have folks coming en masse through the city didn't believe in the exercise of its judgment. It had a way to address those folks. So that was the basis for the local origin exception.
You got a similar ban on motorcycle groups moving through the city?
We do not, but you see local traffic-only signs all over municipalities throughout the state of Colorado. I think if you go beyond the initial issue with bicycles, these are the same type of traffic regulations, whether it's bicycles, whether it's over-the-road coaches, or whether it's any other type of vehicle that municipalities are authorized to regulate. And what the city did is made a legislative judgment, agree or disagree, but a legislative judgment that the way to address its safety concerns in the city was to address bicycles. It had a study that said that bicycles were incompatible with safe movement. The study itself, the compatibility index, didn't account for the things in the city of Blackhawk, such as over-the-road coaches, all of the stopping and standing and parking in the city of Blackhawk. The study recognized that the compatibility index didn't address those things. But the Blackhawk City Council knew what was going on in Blackhawk. They know all of the inherent conflicts with all the different kind of vehicles. Could Blackhawk have prohibited motor vehicles on Gregory Street? Yes. Could Blackhawk have prohibited over-the-road coaches? Yes. They chose to prohibit bicycles in the exercise of their judgment based on the safety concerns.
Here's my concern. You have a distinct preference for excluding a certain type of transportation. And my understanding is based on the Federal Multimodal Act, the Department of Transportation, the incentive for Coloradans to get out of a polluting vehicle into a non-polluting mode of transportation, that these are all kinds of things that the legislature has accommodated. And I think basically it's possible to review all these statutes and say basically that you decided that bicycles weren't compatible with Blackhawk's economic interest in having large motor coaches roll through the streets to the casinos. I mean, is that really what the policy is based on? A preference for other types of transportation?
The city made a value judgment, a safety value judgment, and it picked bicycles to prohibit over-the-road coaches. I think that's what Your Honor is getting at some level. Over-the-road coaches carry multiple people as well. But the conflict was a conflict the city believed had to be addressed. The way it addressed it on a narrow two-lane roadway where you can't expand it based on topography was to prohibit bicycles.
Well, it could have regulated motor coaches.
It could.
Correct, and have them park outside the city and come in on a shuttle bus or something, right? I mean, that's another way of accommodating this. But my concern is you haven't taken into account the statewide legislative declaration that bicycles basically are acceptable mode of transportation in Colorado. You basically, for the economic interests of the city, have said it's incompatible on these roads. We want this other type of transportation. Now, tell me why that isn't so.
I think it's the safety interest. And I understand.
Because what? What's the safety interest that couldn't be addressed by these police control regulations about giving space, slowing down, you know, not running over the bicyclist?
The city could have prohibited other vehicles. I think the issue is the city required to give a preference to bicycles over-the-road coaches, over regular motor vehicles. I don't think the law suggests a preference for bicycles. If you look right outside these chambers, the 16th Street Mall prohibits bicycles on every day except Sunday. The Pearl Street Mall prohibits bicycles. Look throughout municipalities, as referenced in the Colorado Municipal League's briefing. There are many ordinances like this. The reason Blackhawk...
Well, that's a dedicated corridor to move people from the Market Street station to the Broadway station. I don't think you're comparing similar situations here. That is a transportation envelope to move folks in large numbers without rolling buses down the mall through an alternative form of transportation, isn't it?
College Avenue and Fort Collins. There are streets throughout the state of Colorado that prohibit bicycles because it's unsafe. The difference is Blackhawk is a prisoner, if you will, of its topography and its geography. There's no grid system in Blackhawk. They've got one street coming down from Central City, and this issue, the reason this hasn't been before this court before at some level, perhaps, in 2004, Central City opened the Central City Parkway. Prior to that time, this wasn't an issue. CDOT has prohibited bikes on State Highway 6 from Golden and from I-70 because of the tunnels. So bikes are prohibited on State Highway 6. Bikes are actually prohibited on a portion of the Central City Parkway because they found the safety issues, but you can take an alternate route through Central City. Blackhawk doesn't have those alternate routes. There's one road, and one road that the city believed was unsafe for both.
Isn't that exactly why this becomes an issue of mixed state and local concern?
The impact, Your Honor, of this regulation is that someone will have to walk their bike for less than 0.4 miles. That is the extraterritorial impact. That is, at best, the city would suggest, de minimis. If the same restriction was in the middle of a bigger city, that restriction is okay, but because of Blackhawk being a creature of its geography, it's not in Blackhawk, that, the city would suggest, is not the test for whether something is a matter of local, mixed, or statewide concern.
I understand. That's an interesting answer. It sounds like you're arguing the extent to which you would conflict with state law has to do with whether it's a matter of mixed state and local concern. Is that right?
One of the factors is the extraterritorial impact. The city would concede that is one of the factors this court should look at. To the extent that is a factor that petitioners have relied on, that impact is de minimis. And in fact, the city believes this is, under this court's precedent, a matter of local concern. Has been, and for this court to find it to be a mixed concern would change this court's precedent. I would go to the Commerce City case most recently in 2002. The court in the Commerce City case talked about photo radar as a manner of enforcement. That was not a matter of local concern. Changing the burden of proof in a criminal case for conduct criminal under state law, not a matter of local concern. That's the Fleming case.
It seems that in this case, though, I mean, I appreciate your examples and you've cited them, but do any of those have anything to do with the question of intermunicipality transportation, which is what we have here, right? And I take it that's what's at issue in this whole thing. Nobody's contesting, I think, that Blackhawk would be a matter of local concern for you to control your traffic in some place that had only to do with intra-city movement. But where there's a question of inter-city movement, or...
I'm trying to understand how you reconcile that distinction, and that's why, in my mind, this extraterritorial impact is walking your bike 0.4 miles.
That's really, I think, focusing on the impact itself. In other words, the fact that this particular stretch of road happens to be 0.4 miles, and that same 0.4 mile might fall well within the bounds of Fort Collins or something like that, right? But I think where I'm struggling with is the extraterritorial impact here. That same 0.4 stretch in the city of Fort Collins might not impact people outside of the city of Fort Collins, whereas it, at least your opposing counsel would suggest that it has significant extraterritorial impact, just unfortunately by the nature of the topography here. And isn't the extraterritoriality aspect of it what we're concerned with?
Well, when this court has looked at traffic regulations previously, it's looked at things like the elements of reckless driving, speed at intersections, irrespective of where in a given municipality those regulations affected. So whether I am in Denver on the border of Glendale, or whether I'm in the center of Denver, traffic regulations are a matter of local concern. This is a traffic regulation. It is not a manner of enforcement, as it was in the Commerce City case. It's not something that changes the burden of proof. This court's precedent related to what is a matter of local concern and what is not has consistently said in each and every case, if it's traffic regulation, it's a matter of local concern. Now, does Blackhawk become at an inherent disadvantage? Are its traffic concerns entitled to less deference because of its topography. I think that's the other side of this argument. Blackhawk is entitled to make a safety determination on its roadways. This, the extraterritorial impact, if you will, is exacerbated in this case because, again, CDOT, on what is apparently under the definition of controlled access highways, not a controlled access highway, prohibits bikes on Highway 6. So Blackhawk has a safety determination that would then be entitled to less deference than CDOT's or even Central Cities, who doesn't allow bikes on a portion of its parkway. It's for those reasons that it's a matter of local concern. And in the Commerce City case, when the court was talking about why photo radar was a matter of mixed concern and other traffic regulations were not, the court said this. It said that governments have an interest in regulating traffic on local streets and assuring that those streets are safe for its citizens. That's precisely what's occurring here. In fact, in the Commerce City case, the court reiterated its previous holdings of a homeowner municipality being able to best assess the conditions in its municipality based on local geography and road conditions. The regulation in this case has everything to do with that. Everything to do with that. This is a steep, narrow roadway, two lanes. You would literally have to move a mountain or move a structure to make this compatible with safe movement.
There isn't any other street you could dedicate to that, or byway or something like that?
There is not. Coming down from Central City.
See, we've got to write an opinion. And what I'm concerned about is that the position you take is that any municipality in this state, particularly if it's a home rule, can simply ban bicycles. That can't be the choice that the legislature made. They want to accommodate bicycles. And where is your demonstration that you cannot accommodate bicycles? You may not like it. You know, those people in the coaches may not like it. You know, they may not want to slow down. You may want to get the people in there just as fast as you can to gamble. But there are other people that are using the streets and roads of Colorado simply to enjoy Colorado. And you want to take the position that home rule cities completely can ban bicycles after they go through some evaluation of what they want to do. Isn't that your position?
Just like they could ban motor vehicles, buses, trucks on certain roadways. In other words,
okay, certain roadways.
Yes.
Now, you know, you can have a dedicated pedestrian mall. I mean, nobody's arguing you can't have that, but it just appears that this looks like a anti-bicycle preference.
Blackhawk's prohibition was based on those heavily traveled commercial roadways where the conflicts occur. That's why in the ordinance that it ultimately adopted, prohibiting bicycle traffic on some commercial roadways, on the commercial roadways in the ordinance.
Does the study show how bicycles can be accommodated through the city of Blackhawk?
That is the city council's determination, based on the said study, to make those value judgments as to how to best...
I don't think you answered my question. Did the study show how bicycles could be accommodated in Blackhawk?
No, it showed that there was very low bicycle compatibility, and then said that the bicycle compatibility index didn't account for the factors in Blackhawk that made it even worse, which is all of the conflicting movements of traffic.
Could I ask you one more question, one follow-up about an implication of your argument that traffic control is purely a matter of local concern? So would it follow from that that if, for instance, the legislature decided it was an essential transportation route to run through Blackhawk for state purposes, for commerce purposes, and they said, and therefore, trucks of a certain specification cannot be banned from riding on this road. You would say that Blackhawk could countermand that state decision because that's purely a matter of local concern.
Under this court's precedent today, the answer to that question is yes. But in this case, I don't think you have to get there because I think even under a pure statutory analysis, without ever getting to the home rule argument, Blackhawk is authorized to prohibit bicycles on certain roadways.
And so just to make sure I understand, so you're saying even if we took this as a matter of state and local concern mixed, there is no conflict?
That's correct. And I think to answer the question you asked about the basis for the lower court's decision, well, we disagree with the lower court's determination that it's mixed. We think the precedent of this court is that it is local in nature because it's regulation as opposed to a manner of enforcement or procedural protections. Even under that mixed analysis, the reason that the lower courts found that it was not in conflict is because of the language in 42-4-110. And so ultimately, the city would suggest it's not a home rule case. This is a case about the statutory authority afforded to all local authorities, not only cities, not only cities and counties, but counties, creatures of statute. They are all defined as local authorities under 42-4-1.
And as you go into a general explanation of that authority, could you bear in mind the specific 109.11 provision, which would seem to very specifically say what you could do with regard to bicycles? So you must be making an argument that the one statute controls over the other?
Mr. Hoffman, can I just ask Ferguson? It seems like reading Judge Berryhill's opinion that he does read the asphalt paving case to say that the power to regulate includes the power to prohibit, right?
Agreed.
So is that central to your position?
No.
We disagree with that?
I do. I would suggest that that is a question purely of semantics. And so hypothetically, if the city said no bicycle traffic between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m., is that regulation or prohibition? I don't know where you draw that line. And in fact, if you look at the language of other provisions in 111 that uses regulate, clearly means prohibit. Even bicycles can be prohibited under 109, yet council suggests that they can only be regulated under 111. But taking a step back, the assumption in this case from petitioners is that the model traffic code that is embodied in Article 4 of Title 42 is the model traffic code that the city must adopt. That's not what the statute provides. It says a model traffic code, any model traffic code. Denver has no version of the model traffic code. It has its own code that, again, has no reference to this alternate route that is in 42-4-109. So to focus in on 109 or even 111 is not consistent with 42-4-110, which says the city can adopt any model traffic code. The fix here is legislative, if any. The language in 42-4-110 provides the city with the authority to conflict with state law.
You assume, however, in that the legislature hasn't already fixed this. I mean, that's the central issue in this case.
Well, I would tell you that perhaps the best evidence of the recognition that the current state law allows the prohibition at issue here is the failed attempt to adopt House Bill 11-1092, which attempted to amend state law during the 2011 legislative session to prevent local authorities from regulating bikes in the manner that conflicts with state law. That legislation in the 2011 legislative session failed to get out of the state house.
Well, we got a long line of cases having to do with failed legislation. The legislature may already think it took care of that. They didn't need to adopt that.
They may have, but I would suggest that the fact they tried to fix the provision in response to the Black Hawk ordinance is perhaps the best evidence that the law isn't as clear.
I think that's a very tricky statutory construction issue that you've just proposed there. Lots of reasons that bills fail.
And I would ask the court to look at 42-4-110 sub 1 sub c, which prohibits the city of Blackhawk from changing the rules of the road on state highways. If they are prohibited from changing the rules of the road on state highways, the converse must be true on city streets. Otherwise, that language in the statutory scheme has no meaning. None whatsoever. Blackhawk's ordinance did not fall within any of the exceptions referenced in the state statutory provisions, the areas in which the city is not permitted to regulate. There is no statutory prohibition expressed or implied limiting local authorities from adopting conflicting regulations under the plain language of the statute. So you don't have to get to the home rule analysis.
Please, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was just going to follow up to say, would it be fair to characterize what you're saying there, then, the relationship between 110, was it, your authority to adopt a traffic code, and specific provisions, in this case, 10911, has to be understood to mean you're bound, any municipality would be bound by these specific limitations unless they adopt a traffic code that says they're not bound by them?
That's exactly right. Unlike Title 42 in the red books we're all familiar with, this is the model traffic code. It is a code that can be adopted by reference. Council's correct. I think it is the preferred code. But it's not the only code, and Denver has an entirely different one, for example. The reference the council made to Article 15 of Title 31, that's an incorrect reference to what the statute talks about. The reference in 42-1-110 is to Article 16 of Title 31. Why is that important? Because that provision simply talks about the city following the process for adopting a code, not the code, but a code by reference. The city adopted a code by reference, the model traffic code, in fact, but made amendments, as it is specifically authorized to do under Article 16 of Title 31, which authorizes it to adopt codes by reference and make amendments. It made amendments based on the unique circumstances in Blackhawk.
Just to follow up, excuse me, because I had a similar question, which is, how do you read 10911? It's simply optional. It's not controlling.
The city amended 109 as part of its amendment to the model traffic code under its authority to adopt a model traffic code. It picked and chose and said, under the unique circumstances of Blackhawk, this version of 109 applies better. It is impossible to find an alternate roadway within 450 feet. Does that mean we as the city council can't make a safety determination? The city council didn't believe that to be the case. So that's why it amended that provision. And again, if you look through many municipal codes, you won't find any reference to Article 4 of Title 42 in the traffic codes for those cities, because they adopted an entirely different traffic code consistent with the language in 42-4-110.
Mr. Hoffman, can I follow up with that? It looks like you're quoting a sentence towards the end of that paragraph. It starts out with, the provisions of this article shall be applicable and uniform throughout the state and in all political subdivisions, municipalities therein. How do you distinguish the two on that?
Because if you look then at 1A, it talks about specifically enforcing traffic regulations which cover the same subject matter as the various sections of this article. And then it uses the term and such additional regulations as are included in 42-4111.
That includes conflicts?
Yes. Again.
Even though it's not said.
It uses both terms. So you look at rules, you look at both the provisions which cover the same subject matter, in this case, bicycles, and additional regulations, which are those in 42-4-111, which talk about regulating bicycles. It's both, not one or the other. Petitioner's construction of 42-4-111 sub 1 sub A doesn't give any meaning to the term and, because to look at only the additional regulations doesn't allow the city to cover the same subject matter, i.e. bikes. In a model traffic code, which is also in the same statute. And again, I go back to 42-4-110 sub 1 sub C, because you're trying to read the entire statute together, giving meaning to all of its terms. What is the meaning for saying that you can't change the rules of the road on a state highway unless you can do so on a local street? And that's consistent with this court's precedent. that says the rules on local streets are local matters of concern, that cities and towns and counties know their rules, know their topography. So Colorado Springs could change the elements of reckless driving. And again, even in the Commerce City case, which is this court's last pronouncement on traffic-related issues, the court acknowledged its previous precedent related to traffic regulations. And photo radar wasn't about the regulations. It was the manner of enforcement. It was taking the picture. It wasn't that running a red light or going too fast wasn't a matter of local concern. It was the manner of enforcing those laws. And so for this court to find, as petitioners urge, would change this court's precedent related to the fact that traffic, the regulation of traffic, is a matter of local concern. And what it would do is it would circumvent a city's ability to make value judgments related to safety. The news every week is full of discussions about conflicts between bicycles and other vehicles. Council would say, okay, slow down. I agree, that's a great solution. But the city council made the legislative determination that that didn't work, that that didn't address the safety concern. Perhaps because it's because there's over-the-road coaches and delivery trucks on very narrow streets, but all of the reasons that they know the streets of the city of Blackhawk were the bases for their determination that in Blackhawk this was unsafe. And bikes can still travel through Blackhawk on State Highway 119. Blackhawk didn't attempt to, nor could it have, regulated traffic on State Highway 119. So you can still traverse the city of Blackhawk on State Highway 119. Admittedly, you have to walk your bike 0.4 miles if the way you want to get there is from I-70 over the Central City Parkway, through portions of Central City, then down into Blackhawk. Blackhawk found that movement in Blackhawk on Gregory Street was unsafe and requested you walk your bike less than 0.4 miles. You may take issue with the safety judgment of the city, but that judgment certainly wasn't arbitrary. It was a valid safety concern based on conflicts. Cities and counties could make the same decision, and they do.
I guess I'd feel a lot better with that if there was an even-handed evaluation of how to accommodate all the kinds of traffic that Blackhawk gets. And I'm not convinced that an accommodation was made or looked at, and I think the legislature at least wants that kind of situation.
Well,
I mean, these are difficult things, you know. Denver's bicycle-friendly because people like bicycles. Yeah, you know, a lot of us had newspaper routes. We had to navigate this stuff and through newspapers when we got our first job.
I did as well, Your Honor.
Well,
but the statute requires an engineering study. But the engineering study doesn't give the conclusion. It gives the problem. It is for the legislature, in their legislative judgment, to reach the conclusion. And it's not for the courts to interfere unless it's arbitrary. And so the city had a difficult determination.
Well, we're supposed to look at state policy and interpret what the legislature intended. And I think ultimately that's what this case is about. Would you agree?
I would. And I would suggest that if you look at the language of 42-4-110, you will find that it is that Blackhawk's interpretation of all of the provisions of Article 4 of Title 42 show that Blackhawk did have the authority, as do all local authorities, to do this. Even if you don't find that as a matter of its home rule authority, it had the authority as a local traffic regulation under this court's precedent. Thank you, Your Honor.
Schwartz? Hello? In 13 seconds.
Just a couple of quick responses. First of all, we are not asking for a preference for bicycles. We're asking for non-discrimination against bicycles. And that is exactly what 42.4.14.12.1
entitles bicycles to non-discrimination except as expressly provided in, for example, 10911. With respect to the example about, you know, Pearl Street and the 16th Street Mall, I think it's a perfect example, because when I don't ride on Pearl Street, I can ride on Walnut Street and I can ride on Spruce Street. Those are the nearby alternatives that 10911 specifically contemplates. Blackhawk talks about, you know, it asks for deference to its safety judgment, and I don't have time. Our briefs, I think, are comprehensive on why actually the safety determination was absolutely arbitrary and not supported by evidence. But for what we've been discussing, the bigger point is they're only entitled to make legislative judgments with respect to matters that Colorado law gives them power to make legislative judgments about. And this is not one of them for all the reasons we've been discussing. With respect to the model traffic code, it's true. The whole idea in 110.1b is that they may adopt a code, including the model traffic code, to be their ordinances. And they don't have to do that. But what they can't do is conflict with state law. And that's exactly what, you know, the Department of Transportation was warning against or noting in its forward to the model traffic code. It's final point, it's just not true when a Blackhawk says that the only interpretation or the only explanation for 110.1c is that cities do have the power to conflict with state law on non-state highways, and we set that forth, that exact explanation, my time is up. May I finish my...
Certainly, Matt.
Thank you. We set forth in our brief exactly what a plausible alternative explanation for 110.1c is that is not in conflict with the statement at the front of Section 110.1 that the provisions are to be applicable and uniform throughout the state. I thank the court.
Thank both attorneys for your briefs and your arguments. The case will be submitted on the briefs.